Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones died on this day in 1969. Under the influence of drugs and alcohol, taking a midnight swim at his pool at the age of 27. Death by misadventure was what the coroner's report said. Jones, one of the founding members of the Stones, and actually was the driving creative force early on in the band before the Jagger Richards partnership took over. That was very much Brian Jones's band in those early days. Brian Jones died on this day in 1969, age of 27, drowning, death by misadventure, so the coroner says. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve here on the Steve Gruber Show. Thanks so much for joining us on this Friday, July 3rd, heading into the Independence Day weekend. Just a couple of odds and ends to pick up here in this segment. First, I just saw this come across. This is actually yesterday afternoon, but I didn't see it. A Boeing executive, a former Fiat Chrysler PR official, has resigned. Neil Golightly is his name. He resigned as senior vice president of communications at Boeing. It stems from an employee complaint that brought to the company's attention an article he wrote in 1987 while serving in the military about whether women should serve in combat. Someone has been canceled now for something he wrote 33 years ago about whether women should serve in combat. It's going back a long way on a subject that back then, 33 years ago, it's a very different time to have that conversation to begin with. And then B, to be punished for simply having an opinion on the matter and publishing it. I mentioned this a couple of times this week, and I just will stress it one more time, I guess. This culture, this cancel culture, this digging back and finding resurfaced audio, video, writings, it's all about punishing those with which you disagree, but also identifying perhaps one of the worst moments of your life, or least graceful moments of your life, perhaps, and then saying that that and only that defines who you are today and into the future. You can't change. It's original sin. You can't wipe it away, this thing you did 33 years ago, however long it was. There is no forgiveness in this cancel culture. That's a very dangerous place to be. Judicial Watch has filed a lawsuit. This is a delicious lawsuit. You recall in D.C. and some other places, I think Madison, Wisconsin, the D.C. mayor, Muriel Bowser, renamed a public street Black Lives Matter Plaza and ordered those words to be painted in huge yellow letters on two blocks of the district, I should say. And then later allowed other protesters to paint Defund the Police next door. Judicial Watch, an organization you might know, decided to get in on that action because apparently painting on the streets using taxpayer funds is now a legitimate use for the expression of public opinions in D.C. So they sent in a request to paint another street in the same area with their own slogan. Why not? They did not hear anything back from the mayor for approval. So they're taking the mayor to court. This is from Judicial Watch. They announced they are filing a civil rights lawsuit against D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser and other officials for First Amendment violations over their refusal to allow Judicial Watch to paint the message, quote, because no one is above the law on a D.C. street. Bowser authorized the painting of Black Lives Matter, later authorized the painting of Defund the Police to be painted alongside it. Judicial Watch sent a letter requesting permission to paint because no one is above the law in the identical size and coloring of the Black Lives Matter painting on another D.C. street, offered to pay for the cost of the painting, and, citing the timely nature of the issue, of course, asked for a response in 3 days. That response did not come, and now Judicial Watch is taking D.C.'s mayor to court in what should be a fun process. But it might not end there. New York City, Bill de Blasio, did a similar thing Judicial Watch already has sent a letter to Mayor de Blasio in New York City requesting permission to paint their motto on Fifth Avenue between 56th and 57th Streets. No word yet as to whether or not the mayor will comply. I somehow doubt he will allow that to happen. And so to court, perhaps they go in New York as well, if they want to sue the mayor of New York City to allow their painting, their message on the streets of New York City. That is a nice job of, is it a troll? I mean, sure, it's a troll, I suppose, but it's a good one. It's one that has some basis in law, right? Going to court on it. This out of Massachusetts, you should be aware of, too. Remember that there's never any slippery slope except when it happens and it's beyond the point when you can argue there is a slippery slope. A Massachusetts city northwest of Boston, believed to be the first in the nation, to adopt an ordinance recognizing polyamory. Somerville, Massachusetts, adopted a domestic partnership policy this week, including polyamorous couples, after a unanimous vote of the city council last week. Now, you, fine Steve Gruber Show listener, might be asking yourself, polyamorous, I kind of get it, I guess. What is that? Polyamory is the practice, this is from a USA Today story. Polyamory is the practice of having multiple intimate relationships with the full knowledge and consent of everyone involved. The city's law defines a domestic partnership as an entity formed by people instead of an entity formed by two persons. It replaces he and she with they and replaces both with all. The ordinance was signed into law by the mayor on June 29th. The issue popped up because of the pandemic. Somerville residents who aren't married came to counselors concerned about not having the ability to visit sick partners in the hospital. The city does not have a domestic partnership ordinance, so they said, well, all right, we'll put a domestic policy, domestic partnership ordinance on the books. And then when they decided to write the language, well, you see the language they used. A chosen family law center senior legal director, Andy Isenson, said he never had seen any town adopt such a broad policy. Somerville is a population of 81,000. No word as to how many of them are in polyamorous relationships. But if you are, Somerville, Massachusetts now will recognize you as being in a polyamorous relationship. How long until we have a Supreme Court case on this subject of polyamory? And how do you think perhaps John Roberts might vote on the matter, in line with the liberal justices on the court, or not? It's a question, I suppose. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve here on the Steve Gruber Show. You missed anything today? You missed anything all week as I've been filling in? Head to the website. Click on podcast. You'll find all the segments from this week. Listen at your convenience over this Independence Day holiday weekend. We come back with Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center. Scott Bertram in for Steve on the Steve Gruber Show.
The Michigan Chamber of Commerce, the most powerful voice for business in Michigan.
I'm Jim Holcomb, Executive Vice President of the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. To say that we are in challenging times is an understatement. Employers and employees are struggling through no fault of their own. But in Michigan, we're tough and we're determined to get through this temporary situation. At the Michigan Chamber, we are working with policymakers at all levels of government to provide the necessary resources for business. We've assembled a coronavirus toolkit at michamber.com. We're providing factual information on unemployment benefits, financial relief resources, and guidance for employers and employees to stay safe. It's clear the business community is leading the way. They're protecting their employees, they're protecting their communities, and they're keeping Michigan economy strong. We'll get through this together. I'm Jim Holcomb from the Michigan Chamber of Commerce.
The Michigan Chamber of Commerce, moving Michigan forward.
Helping those who need it most, while building a better future. That's what Michiganders do. And it's what DTE is doing today. Giving 2 million masks to frontline workers and 600,000 to small businesses. Providing tablets and internet access so 51,000 school children can learn at home. and helping over 500,000 families across the state with food and shelter. Because for Michigan, we're always all in. DTE. DTE is taking big steps today that will power Michigan's economy for years to come. As one of the largest investors in the state, we'll spend $2 billion with Michigan companies this year alone, building critical infrastructure to provide cleaner, safer, and more reliable energy while creating thousands of new jobs across the state, improving the lives of Michiganders today while continuing to build a stronger tomorrow. DTE.